Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is just to take a ticket and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. What happens? What happens when a company that Wall Street has written off surprises us? Surprises with much better than expected earnings. Well, I'll tell you what happens. Its stock explodes higher. Today we got one, not two, but three, no, four. Making four of these situations. And they help protect a market that otherwise I think would have been slammed.
Sell, sell, sell.
Because it looked pretty nasty at the beginning. You know what? Dow only dipped just 21 points. S&P edged down 0.22%. NASDAQ declined 0.36%. Much better than what it was like early in the morning. Now we got to wonder, how in the world can so many of these upside surprises occur without warning? I mean, shouldn't we be able to predict these things? It's simple. It's all about the sellers, the short sellers. We spend a lot of time focused on the long side in the show. You like a stock, you buy it, you make money. If it goes higher, you ring the register. But the shorts do the same thing, too. You dislike a stock, you borrow shares, you sell them. And then if you're right, you can buy them back at lower prices and you turn a profit. There's one major difference, though. When you buy a stock, the process is very straightforward. When you short a stock, first you need to borrow someone else's shares. Then you sell those shares. You can't sell something you don't have, right? Then when a short wants to exit the position, they need to buy back that stock. Which brings me to what happened today. When a company is hated, you tend to have a lot of short sellers, a lot of short sellers betting against that company. If that company then reports a big upside surprise, you get what's known as a short squeeze. I'm trying to give you the context here, where the shorts scramble to cover or buy back the stock. But there aren't enough shares around, so their panic purchases send this stock soaring higher. Today, we had a whole parade of short squeezes in Skyworks Solutions, the New York Times, Capri Holdings, that's the old Michael Kors, and even Snap. Together, they helped stabilize a market that seemed like it was really going to head pretty low. Let's start with Snap, the parent of Snapchat, that I've warned you away from practically since it came public. Here's a company that just hasn't been able to shoot straight. Snap repeatedly missed its own forecast. They spent billions of dollars on long-term contracts with Google and Amazon to host traffic that may not even happen, or at least dried up a little. The only thing more unnerving than the endless shortfalls and failed redesigns was the departure of not one but two chief financial officers in a very brief period of time. The last one even walked away from restricted stock units that could have been worth a lot of money. I mean, that raised eyebrows, huh? Snap stock was so awful, it practically became an annuity for the short sellers. Just an easy way for them to win and win and win. Then this morning, out of nowhere, CEO Evan Spiegel, who seems to have matured beyond his years since Snap came public 2 years ago, delivered a truly excellent quarter with good growth and a nice stabilization in users. As Spiegel explained on the conference call, and I quote, although 2018 was challenging in many ways, we are proud of the significant changes we have made to strengthen our company and grow our business over the long term. We brought together a more experienced leadership team, improved our core product to better serve our community, and built scalable infrastructure for our advertising business, end quote. Not bad. He then goes on to say that Snap did all of this while growing its full-year revenues at a 43% clip year over year. And I quote, bringing profitability within reach. Holy gee, did you hear that? So much for the worries about Snap's balance sheet. Suddenly, it's looking like a pretty viable growth company. The result, Snap stock exploded higher as the panicked short sellers desperately tried to cover the positions, shares closing up 22% in one day. Company still has a lot to prove, but I'm done criticizing them. Evan, good job under trying circumstances. No longer going to be slagged by me. I'm done with that game. Next up, there's Capri Holdings. Hey, that's the old Michael Kors, the fashion company with a beaten down stock. Oh, man, that this morning reported a terrific quarter. I think these numbers may have set them up for a multi-year, not multi-quarter, but multi-year runway. CEO John Idol took the old Kors brand. Hey, remember, he made a lot of it to begin with. And then he added Jimmy Choo and most recently Versace, two excellent but undermanaged businesses, to create what could be the next retail colossus. And today, Idol laid out a multi-year roadmap to turn these three brands into the envy of the industry, multi-billions of dollars of sales. Now, I've studied these brands, and to me, they've never looked stronger. I think the international opportunities are insanely positive. Capri had gotten away from the big logos that are the latest and greatest, and Idol seems to have overcome the travails of the Kors watch business. The company's now producing some of the most fun, whimsical, fresh, and outside-the-box luxury goods around. Now, I've been a big Jimmy Choo shopper, and I can't tell you how many times I've gone to there, a year, how many times, hoping for new merchandise to give my wife, top influencer Lisa Detweiler, something, but they never had anything new. It drove me crazy. Now the lines, not people in line, but the product lines, are so fresh that it's going to cost me a fortune. And hey, even after today's 11% run, Capri still sells for roughly 10 times next year's earnings estimates, making it one of the cheapest names in the group. I predict upgrade after upgrade after upgrade, stock goes higher. The New York Times, what can I say? President Trump created his own worst nightmare of a short squeeze by constantly calling the failing New York Times the failing New York Times. We took a look at it 2 years ago when it was at 19, and we found out that it wasn't failing at all, that Trump's been an incredible spur to online subscriptions. Today, the great lady produced a quarter that showed how this company's become the poster child for the subscription economy. Yes, Teen Zoo Zora, right? And the stock vaulted 10% to $29.69, powered in part by another short squeeze. I believe it's got more room to run. The president is a virtual flywheel for the New York Times. And as long as the world continues to be kind of crazy, I think they'll keep blowing away the numbers. Finally, there's Skyworks Solutions, a semiconductor company that was supposed to be crushed by the fact that it's an iPhone supplier. Oh, my, is there anything worse than being an iPhone supplier? The shorts have been coining money here as Skyworks gets slammed on every piece of bad news from Apple. Today, the company reported a not-so-hot quarter, but it was better than feared. And more importantly, management told a fantastic story. Skyworks finally got investors to stop worrying about the iPhone and start focusing on the fact that this company may be the dominant player in 5G. Least the least risky one. The next generation wireless technology is just beginning to be built out more. I'm going to give you that more on that later. It's a worldwide move. Oh, and it sure didn't hurt that they announced a monster $2 billion buyback. I love that balance sheet. Skyworks was a godsend for the bulls because so many people have been blown out trying to ride the 5G wave via Qualcomm, which has very bitter patent suits with Apple, which is not great seeing as Apple, well, what can I say? The largest customer. Skyworks, on the other hand, has a pristine balance sheet and a fantastic conservative CEO, Liam Griffin. Frankly, I am a huge fan, but even I was stunned by the stock's reaction up 11% today. Skyworks ignited the entire group. Remember, they're all connected via the SMH, including Intel, which has been going up nonstop since the reported so-so quarter. And Micron finally broke out above 40. That's unbelievable, right? This thing's been running like mad. I'm going to give you some more on Skyworks later in the show because that's how important the stock was. Here's the bottom line. I know it seems counterintuitive that we could be led by short squeeze stocks, but when you have four of them, let's just say it makes a ton of sense as a prop on a day that we could have been down a great deal, and perhaps we even should be. I want to go to Jim in New York. Jim.
Hello, Jim Cramer. Long-time viewer here. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for watching. How can I help?
You gave Clorox a convincing thumbs up a couple of weeks ago, so I purchased some for my IRA and my two sons' custodial accounts.
Okie dokie.
Clorox gapped up Monday on earnings, but not in our accounts. And that's when I realized I had bought CL, not CLX. Not an exciting long-term chart for CL, but we're up short-term over 5%, slightly ahead of where we'd be today in CLX, and it yields 2.6%. Hold, take profit.
I actually liked the conference call. I think it showed a lot of good turn. I think that there, I wasn't as good as I'd like, and there was, I mean, a lot of the analysts panned it, but the stock has gone down low enough. I think that Colgate, you're buying at a great level. I don't have a catalyst, but it's, how about this? It's not as bad as it used to be. I know, that's darning with faint praise, but it's what I have to tell you. I need to go to Bobby in Michigan. Bobby.
Mr. Kramer,
yes.
My question is regarding the Baltic Dry Index, which you've opined in the past. It's down 50% in a month, pretty much in a straight line.
Right.
So what does this tell us?
Well, right now it tells us that the Chinese New Year is making it so there's no Baltic freight. But what I would tell you is that's indicative of exactly what I keep saying, which is that China needs us more than we need them. I'm telling you, China in business is doing badly, with the exception of a couple of retailers. And I recommend Alibaba because they're still spending. But the country itself is in, I think, close to a level of growth that is just the lowest in years and years. How about we go to Dan in Indiana? Dan!
Booyah, Jim, from beautiful Carmel, Indiana. Thanks
there you go. I mean, I've been thinking that Carmel was like that. I'm glad you filled me in. What's up?
Well, my stock is Halliburton, and I watched the Dick Cheney movie Vice on Christmas Day, which kind of prompted me to do some research on Hal. And I realized the stock was down 40% for the year and actually hit a low of 25.31 on December 26th after being as high as 55 earlier in the year. So on December 28th, I jumped in to 26.50, and I've been fortunate that I'm up 20%. But, Jim, in general, the oil company stocks scare me to death.
Well, they should, because I'm telling you, these things are going to end up being like coal or maybe even like tobacco. And I'm not recommending. I mean, I like BP. It's got a good yield. Halliburton's just okay. By the way, everyone thinks Halliburton's a Republican company. I'm a Republican. I remember when it was a Democratic company and got more heat for being a Democratic company than a Republican company. So, but Halliburton, I don't want to own the stock. All right. When a disappointing company surprises Wall Street, you get a rocket. Today we got four of these rockets. Well, man, buddy, tonight, tariffs get most of the headlines when it comes to the U.S. China trade conflict. Well, I got to tell you something. I'm eyeing a difficult angle in the plot line, and it's a more positive one. You may hold the answer in the palm of your hand. Then 5G can change wireless, but can it also change your portfolio? I'm eyeing a few companies that no one is talking about, and you need to find it. I'll tell you, if you own one of them, you're going to do well. And while it may not have been the centerpiece, health was a persistent theme in Trump's State of the Union address last night. How could the administration's health-related goals impact the stock of Centene, which just got crushed? I'm talking with the very bankable CEO. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whenever you hear about the trade war with China, it's usually in the context of tariffs or boycotts or who's losing business. But there are plenty of ways you can try to profit from our government's ongoing dispute with the Chinese. So tonight I want to talk to you about a side of this story that just hasn't gotten nearly enough attention until now. For me, this trade war is less about tariffs or jobs or opening up the Chinese market to American companies and more about cybersecurity. Stealing our information. In particular, I think we're fighting over who gets to own the 5G wireless business, a huge opportunity as the next generation networks are being built out right now all across the globe. For years, Chinese telco companies like Huawei and ZTE have been taking market share worldwide by undercutting the competition on price. But ever since the trade war got rolling, these two companies have been hit with a series of incredibly damaging revelations. I find them to be breathtaking, frankly, including repeated accusations from the CIA and the NSA that Huawei and ZTE have very close relationships with the Chinese government, if not the military. So if you include their hardware in your 5G network, you're practically begging the Communist Party to spy on you. By the way, this is something China already does. I mean, remember, they hacked Marriott, for heaven's sake. Needless to say, this kind of thing hurts their ability to win new contracts. That's where the opportunity comes in. If you're a telco carrier and you've been warned off of Huawei and ZTE, so where are you going to go buy new 5G technology? Well, I got an idea. Ironically, the two best players here are both European. There's Ericsson and there's Nokia. These once beleaguered companies now have a chance to win the race for 5G supremacy. Their equipment might be more expensive than what the Chinese can make. Sometimes I think a lot of people would say it's even lower quality. Actually, I think the majority might say that. But you better believe neither Sweden nor Finland are pressuring their companies to spy on their customers. The Scandinavians are like the Swiss. They try very hard to be neutral. Although, unlike Switzerland, they've invented a lot more than the cuckoo clock. Last night, I was talking with Robert Herjavec. I mean, you know him probably. One of the sharks of Shark Tank. But in the real life, he runs the Herjavec Group. That is one of the largest cybersecurity companies on Earth. He advises the best of the best about what can go wrong, about cyber terrorism. So why don't you listen to what he had to say when I asked him about Huawei?
I tell my clients to be very careful. I mean, the European Union just warned about using those products. There's a lot of warnings from different governments to use it. But it amazes me the large corporations and governments still use it. You cannot beat the attraction of low prices.
Talk about penny wise versus pound foolish. Shame on them. But it's also not what you want to hear if you're running ZTE or Huawei. Just consider the parade of horribles these two companies have been hit with over the past year. Last April, our Commerce Department banned U.S. equipment sales to ZTE. In fact, that's effectively a death sentence for the business because they've been selling networking supplies to Iran and North Korea. Can you imagine if an American company tried to do that? It'd be borderline treasonous. That ban was lifted after ZTE paid a miserable little $1 billion penalty, replaced most of its leadership, and allowed in a team of compliance monitors for the next decade. Still, if you're a wireless carrier deciding where to buy hardware for your 5G build-out, I think this whole saga does not inspire confidence. Since then, the White House has shifted its attention to Huawei, a much larger company with an even shadier track record. In December, the Canadian authorities arrested Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou. Oh, by the way, she also happens to be the daughter of the company's founder. Get that, okay? Our government is trying to get her extradited. Last week, the Justice Department rolled out a whole list of charges: wire fraud, obstruction of justice, conspiracy to launder money, and illegally doing business with Iran. Guys, this is serious. Our eyes glazed over like they didn't do anything wrong. Are you kidding me? At the same time, we've accused Huawei itself of allegedly stealing trade secrets from T-Mobile. I read the brief. It doesn't read well for Huawei. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Since January of last year, our government has been urging telco companies like AT&T to cut ties with Huawei and ZTE, warning that they'll be ineligible for federal subsidies if they keep doing business with these guys. Roughly 12 months ago, the CIA, NSA, FBI, and Defense Intelligence Agency told the Senate that smartphones from Huawei and ZTE pose a security threat to American customers. Last May, the Pentagon ordered stores on American military bases to stop selling their smartphones. Yeah, but you know what? They're cheaper, so what? Let's just compromise everything for the almighty dollar, right? Just everything. The Trump administration has gotten very aggressive on this issue, and it's working. In September, AT&T announced that they'll be buying their 5G equipment from Ericsson, Nokia, and Samsung. Verizon's using the same three suppliers. T-Mobile's only using Ericsson and Nokia. So Huawei and ZTE are effectively shut out of the 5G market here in the U.S. Meanwhile, our government has been pushing allies to keep Chinese companies out of their own 5G networks, too. We're pushing the Europeans to ban Huawei's equipment on the grounds that it may be a threat to NATO. In December, SoftBank, the Japanese telecom giant, actually announced they'll be ripping out Huawei's hardware from their current 4G network and replacing it with gear from Nokia and Ericsson. Now, for years, Nokia and Ericsson have been horrific underperformers precisely because these Chinese companies were undercutting them in price. But lately, their stocks have started to turn around. Some of that is simply because the 5G build-out is a huge opportunity for everybody. But some of it, though, is because our government is doing everything it can to shut out Huawei and ZTE from this business. Sure, they have better technology. As I mentioned, they're cheaper. But those products may come in with a built-in backdoor that lets the PRC spy on your whole data network. How do you put a price on that kind of liability? Well, if the carriers are smart, they won't even try. They'll just keep going with Nokia and Ericsson. So which of these two is better stock? Ericsson reported on Jan 25th, delivering strong sales, and management sounded very bullish about the year ahead. They already have some nice momentum from 5G and the Internet of Things. I bet that's going to continue. Nokia reported last Thursday, and even though the headline numbers were good, the stock got slammed down nearly 7% couple of days. Why the weakness? Well, even though Nokia's management told a very good story, they also said that they expected the bulk of their wireless business for 2019 to come in the second half of the year because of the way these 5G rollouts are staged or staggered, meaning the first half might not be so hot. But I don't think that's the real reason. The truth is, Nokia stocks soared higher when Ericsson posted good numbers the week before. And stocks that run up into earnings tend to sell off even on strong numbers. Now, Nokia's American shares are at $6.05, which to me is crazy. That's just a few cents below where they were trading before Ericsson reported. I prefer Nokia here, but both because it's too cheap here and because it has a better portfolio of end-to-end solutions. I have not recommended Nokia since 1997. Bottom line, for years, Nokia and Ericsson have been steamrolled by Huawei and ZTE. That's over. Now the U.S. government is doing everything it can to keep these companies out of 5G wireless, not just here, but worldwide. And that is a huge opportunity for Nokia and Ericsson. I think they both work, although I do prefer Nokia. And I bet both stocks will get more attractive as our government keeps ratcheting up the pressure on, well, our allies to not use anything from these Chinese companies. Let's be honest. Convincing Europe to buy European, it isn't really all that tough to sell. Stay with Kramer.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Before the break, I told you how Nokia and Ericsson are poised to take a ton of market share in the 5G wireless space, thanks to President Trump's trade war with China. Our government is doing everything it can to keep their Chinese competitors out of these next-generation networks. That's created a huge opportunity for Nokia and Ericsson. But there are a lot more ways to play the holy grail that is 5G. You have to understand, this is the secular growth theme that can deliver tremendous multi-year gains. As telco carriers build out their much faster 5G cellular networks, it's ultimately going to cost them hundreds of billions of dollars. This is an enormous pie, and all sorts of businesses are poised to grab a piece of it. For example, if you're a semiconductor company with 5G exposure, this is your moment. Last night, Skyworks Solutions reported a better-than-feared quarter where they finally convinced investors to stop worrying about a slowdown in the smartphone market. Instead, will you please start focusing on the promise of 5G? Hey, that helped stock pole vault up $8.73, or 11.5%. The strength of Skyworks created some major positive pin action. Remember, these are all connected to ETFs for the other chip makers. With all the ones that have 5G exposure, Flu, Intel, Qualcomm, Micron, Texas with Broadcom, and Xilinx, they all had fabulous moves. Remember we did that piece just last week about the SMH breaking out? Well, it turns out it is breaking out big time. Let's go through them one by one. Okay, why don't we start with Skyworks Solutions. That's the proximate driver of today's semiconductor rally. The thing about Skyworks is that they didn't actually report a terrific quarter. The company missed on some major line items. Guidance was substantially weaker than expected, although I know some analysts who expected far worse. So why the heck then did this stock catch fire? As I said at the top of the show, we got a short squeeze abetted by the company's announcement of a $2 billion buyback. That's a huge deal for a $14 billion company. By the way, they have no debt on the balance sheet. And it gave some people the sense that management was trying to call its own bottom, much like when Lam Research rolled out its own massive buyback for about a quarter of the company a couple weeks ago and like about 30 points. I mean, that stock has been amazing. But there was another factor here. Skyworks makes radio frequency chips for all sorts of connected devices, especially smartphones, including the iPhone. And this has not been a great business lately. On the conference call, though, Skyworks was finally able to change the darn narrative. CEO Liam Griffin, my like on the fact that he's a Pats fan, stressed repeatedly that, and I quote, the shift to 5G is a tremendous catalyst, end quote, as it will lead to a tsunami of new connected devices that need Skyworks chips. That's the new narrative. We saw the same thing with the 4G rollout of less than a decade ago. No wonder Goldman Sachs upgraded the stock today, predicting that the business will bottom in the first quarter and arguing that the risk reward here is too attractive to ignore. That's a gutsy call. Makes sense to me. Even for today's run, get this, Skyworks sells for less than 12 times next year's earnings. And I think there could be a long runway here. Skyworks is back, guys. Skyworks is back. And I followed this company longer than everybody other than the people who, yes, David Aldridge, the former CEO. Next up, there's Intel. I just spent a whole segment explaining how Ericsson and Nokia are poised to take share in the 5G space. Well, guess who makes their chips? Yep, Intel. I know you probably think of this company as being all about processors for personal computers and servers, data center, but they've been trying to diversify into other areas like autonomous drive. Remember the mobile acquisition, Internet of Things, communications. As now permanent CEO Bob Swan, congratulations, Bob, explained on the latest conference call, 5G is another big opportunity for both our PC-centric and data-centric businesses. At CES, we unveiled the new 10-nanometer-based network system on a chip. Codenamed Snow Ridge, developed specifically for 5G wireless access and edge computing, end quote. Now, Intel's had some real execution issues of late. Their latest results and guidance were unambiguously bad, although the stock has now rebounded back to where it was trading before the quarter because investors figured the industry is about to bottom and Intel goes along with it. Let me give you my view on it. With its 2.5% yield, new CEO who's very energized, I think you do a lot worse than Intel. It's a slow and steady way to play the 5G build out. So, Intel, I'm blessing it. Third, there's Qualcomm, tougher for me, the huge communications technology company that has its hands in all things wireless, especially 5G. They used to be the, it was synonymous with 5G. Just listen to what Qualcomm's president, Christian Amon, had to say on the subject. And I quote, "We believe that virtually all 5G mobile devices launched in 2019 will be built on Qualcomm Technologies 5G solutions." Holy cow. When Qualcomm reported last week, the term 5G was mentioned, get this, 48 times on their conference call. Yeah, we actually counted 41, 2, 47, 48. They're in handsets, the Internet of Things, autos, next-generation Wi-Fi. And it's not just hardware. Companies also getting royalties galore thanks to the mountain of 130,000 odd patents. This is a patent machine here. If Qualcomm's 5G business was an independent company, it would be the obvious winner. However, the stock has been pulverized of late because the company's engaged in an increasingly hostile, bitter intellectual property dispute with its largest customer. Never a good idea. Apple. And it's got a ton of exposure to the Chinese market. Not great considering the trade war. I'm optimistic about Qualcomm's long-term prospects when it comes to 5G. But if you want to buy it, I recommend building a position gradually over time because you might get more weakness. Or you know what? You actually may have to talk to the Nigerians here. It could be a call option situation, even though, yes, there's a big dividend you can't get if you own the calls. What else? You could always play 5G with Broadcom, the gigantic chip maker for communication, connectivity, and the Internet of Things that CEO Hock Tan has built via a series of very smart acquisitions. Nearly a year ago, Broadcom tried to acquire Qualcomm in a hostile takeover bid, but it was blocked by the U.S. government for what I felt were bogus reasons. The stock got slaughtered. However, in recent months, Broadcom's come roaring back. Even without the Qualcomm deal, they've got plenty of 5G exposure. Last year, they rolled out the first 5G radio switch, and they've got Wi-Fi chips the carriers will use to provide indoor coverage for their 5G network. Now, Broadcom's far from a pure play on 5G, especially after that recent software acquisition of CA, which actually is looking like it's going to work out. But they definitely benefit from the build-out. And importantly, the rest of the businesses are on fire here. I have long been a fan of the stock, as you know. My only hesitation here is that Broadcom has run so much over the summer. It was a $200 stock, now it's a $276. That said, the darn thing still, even after that rally, sells for just 10 times next year's earnings estimates. Hock Tan is a fabulous CEO, and he's been buying back stock hand over fist. My view, Broadcom's terrific. But if you don't already own it, you might want to wait for a pullback to pull the trigger. That's how we're telling people for the members of the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. Finally, there is Xilinx. Xilinx is a company that makes programmable logic devices, flexible chips that can be customized for each customer's needed. A couple weeks ago, Xilinx reported one of the biggest blowouts of this past earnings season, maybe top 10 for 2019. The numbers were spectacular, thanks in large part to the worldwide build-out of, yes, 5G networks. As CEO Victor Peng, smart fella, explained, quote, "The start of this ramp is happening faster than we had thought, and the strength for coming out of the gate is pretty strong," end quote. This one really set the world on fire, but certainly Xilinx stock. One catch. The real driver for Xilinx has been overseas, particularly new 5G deployments in South Korea. However, Xilinx also gets roughly a quarter of its sales from China. And while they're currently doing darn well there, as long as the trade war continues, that business could potentially be put in jeopardy. That was one of the big lids on the stock for a while. Now the stock has run up dramatically here. I like the stock of Xilinx so much, I did. I took the ultimate measure. I renamed my new rescue mutt Xilinx. Yet he actually answered last night to Xilinx because I had a piece of flaming young in my hand. The wife keeps insisting his name is still Bob Marley. Tiresome. But if you're going to buy the stock at these levels, you need to understand that this is the high-risk, high-reward way to play 5G. The bottom line. The 5G build-out has arrived, and there are a host of semiconductor companies that are poised to benefit. Let's just tick them down. We got the Skyworks, the Intel, the Qualcomm, Broadcom, and the stock formerly known as Bob Marley, Xilinx. At the moment, Skyworks is my favorite because it's so darn cheap, and Liam is such a good manager. They finally got the investors focused on the 5G future, but you can make the case for all five. Why don't we go to Jay in Arizona, Jay.
Booyah, Jim. Just calling about my dividend machine, Vodafone. Over the years, there's always been good news. They made inroads in India, signed on the partners, stock goes up. Now it seems that every time they're in the news, they're in the same sentence with Huawei. They made a dividend payment this week, and next one's due in August. I'm thinking, what could happen between now and then?
I think you're reaching for yield, sir. I think you literally are taking a 6% yield. It's kind of like ATT, and you're going to say it's fine. I don't know about that. Remember, we don't like it. It does not protect you if we're worried about it. Look at the CenturyLink. Look at that CTL. How many analysts buried you alive in CTL? Okay, 5G has arrived, and I think these companies are poised to benefit. Skyworks is my favorite, but you can make the case for all five. Hey, you know what? We got much. This is Maroon 5. Say, Lipit, it says Pennsylvania. All right, there's much more Mad Money ahead. Senti and its sword after the earnings, CNC. But can the company momentum continue? I'm talking with the CEO. Then, when you look at the winners so far this quarter, what's the prevailing theme? Let me think. Using Clorox, Ralph Lauren, Estee Lauder, great case studies. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. What the heck happened to the stock of Centene yesterday? We got some truly perplexing action in the stock of this health plan provider for government-sponsored programs like Medicare, Medicaid, the Obamacare exchanges. After getting slammed for no particular reason back in December, Centene stock got its groove back last month. Then the company reported yesterday morning, and the results were fantastic. I scrutinized every bit of it. Centene delivered a 6-cent earnings beat off a $1.32 basis, higher than expected revenue, up 29% year over year. Fantastic, huh? Management gave you a higher than expected full year forecast, too. Well, initially, the stock surged from 130 to 138. I said, well, that's rational. Then over the course of the session, it gave back all of those gains and then some, closing at 127 change. And today, the stock, it sank to 126. To me, this action seems crazy, irrational. Company's in terrific shape. So why can't the stock get any love here? Let's take a closer look with Michael Dinoroff. He's the chairman and CEO of Centene. Learn more about the quarter and where his company is headed. Mr. Dinoroff, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim.
How are you, sir?
Great to see you.
All right. So what I like to do, have a seat, is I like to read conference calls in quiet at home without looking at the stock. And I said, okay, 52-week high coming. Followed in the shoes of UnitedHealth, but maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit stronger. And it went down. What the heck?
I used to think the market's irrational.
Right.
This one I don't understand.
Not at all.
Every number was solid. No noise in the quarter. No noise in the year. Executing superbly. Buying hospitals in Madrid. Everything we're doing, precise. Numbers good. Increased
guidance. I need to do a correctional contract? That's a brilliant idea. Moving up. No, that is a big business.
Yeah. It's just, everybody I talk to. Now, today it took a hit because an analyst, we're splitting the stock tomorrow, 2-for-1.
Right.
Okay? So a new analyst said, target price, $80.
I read that, I said, oh my God. And when I read the title, I said, this guy must hate the stock. And then I remembered the split.
Yeah, it's actually,
so it's
raised
actually, he's raised.
160, okay?
I swear it may have hurt you. I'm not kidding, because it looked like it was an $80 total. Now, let me ask you something. On the conference call, you said something, and then I watched the president last night. A little long. Yeah. He said, all right, let me provide some commentary on healthcare legislation, legal and regulatory environment. You're not a comedian, right, by trade, right?
No.
We are hopeful that the divided government leads to a greater constructive dialogue from both parties when it comes to healthcare policy. The president I heard last night was the opposite, and I thought maybe that hurt you.
Hey, I think so. People were worried about what he was going to say and what he was going to try and do. But I do believe that I think there's a chance. We have all kinds of ideas in an active Washington office promoting things that are good public policy. And I'm out there telling everybody I can, we have to move to policy, not away from politics.
Right.
Because, good policy.
Was anyone listening to you?
Some do. And I'm hoping that at least now, with the split, it will provide some protection to our business.
Do people know that you save the government money?
The important ones do.
Well, I mean,
the states, I was with the governor yesterday, and he understands that his costs are lower, the outcomes are better.
You're going into Idaho, right?
Yes.
Now, to me, Idaho's like the state of Oregon. I've talked to you about my daughter. Nobody writes. You come in, you save the state, you save everybody money, and everybody gets health care. What's wrong with this picture?
I don't know, Jim. I wish I did. I mean, it's the most frustrating thing for us.
It is.
I mean, when you're executing well, there's times sometimes you see somebody get a hit that they deserve.
How about that makes sense. How about this low-income beneficiary 15 clinic acquisition? That's another thing. They don't have these. I got 15 ready clinics at every corner where I live.
Right.
It's a nice neighborhood. There's no ready clinics in the...
What these are good for is if I have a place where there's not access and they're underserved, I can move them in and he'll open one up for us and we'll have access for people. It's all about access, high-quality call, high quality care, lower cost. That's what we're focused on.
Okay, I'm big focused on the Apple. and the watch. If you could get people in your area to go and start looking about AFib because they have watches that say, listen, they're at risk to AFib, congestive heart failure because they have a at risk, according to the Mayo Clinic, they have a database, artificial intelligence. Would that be something that would be good for Centene?
It could be, but we have a system now called Interpreter. It can look at all 14 million files in less than 3 minutes. If somebody's potassium is moving up, it sends an email to their doctor that says he's at risk for a coronary event. So we are doing all this predictive things and stopping things. So there are things like the Apple Watch and that. It takes a lot of technology, a lot of learning.
But you've got to be in favor of something that can save lives.
We're working on all those kinds of things.
Has Tim Cook called you?
No, I haven't talked to him, but I've talked to some others.
Oh, okay.
Which I won't talk about here because then I...
One last thing. Why are you doing the thing I like the most, which is splitting stocks so retail investors can get in? And the Googles of the world never split it, and the Amazons. Don't they understand that retail investors are the people who buy and own and don't flip and don't trade and don't short? Why does anybody not understand that either?
I don't know. I think it's important to increase the float. I mean, we're a $27, $28 billion market cap. And to have 400 million shares is not much. And I like the fact, as you said, that now there's a retail market
for it. Yes! Hey, by the way, what do you think about Senator Harris's single pay?
I think there's a lot of talk about it.
Right.
We can't afford it.
How about the middle-of-the-road fellow there, Howard Schultz, with the says it's too expensive?
Way too expensive.
All right. Well,
we can't afford it.
Okay, well, there's some agreement here on these issues. The watch I like, the split I like, the craziness in the stock I don't like.
I don't like it either.
We're
on board 100%.
All right. Hey, listen, you've had 6 points in your diet, and you made a lot of money for people. Okay, that's Michael Moderf. He's the chairman and CEO of Centene Corp. Guys, I'm telling you, this was an irrational move. I feel this way. He feels this way. It just made no sense to me. Mad Money's back in for free. It is time. It's over the light round. Good morning, Broncos. What do you say? And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skate Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Chris, let's start with Abdul in Alabama. Abdul.
The man, the legend, Mad Money Kramer.
I'll take it.
From the Magic City, and happy early birthday to you.
Oh, close enough to do the job. Thank you for remembering. What's going on?
Not much. Kramer, got a question for you. Technology company Yext. NYSE ticker, YEXT.
I am not a Yext fan. But you know what? I'm not going to leave you high and dry because you said such nice things. So instead of Yext, let's change the letters around. I'm going to give you a Yeti. I think Yeti's doing very well. At $17, it's the right stock, though. Let's go to Gary in Florida. Gary.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Gary.
I wanted to ask you about Canada Goose.
I'm surprised that the stock acts so badly. I'm wondering if people feel like it's really that much of a winter play and it wasn't cold enough. Hey, Danny Reese is doing a remarkable job. The stock at 55 is a buy. And by the way, I think they're going to move into all sorts of new lines. And everyone's a little concerned they're going to come in and take that business away. Ann in Indiana. Ann.
Jim, thanks for taking my call. I listened to the IDEX conference call. They reported on the first.
Yes.
They beat and raised, but is everything okay?
Yes, good call. I mean, look, the stock is like any growth stock. These got just annihilated. I will tell you that I think this is a great level to buy IDEX. And let me tell you, I think Zoetis is very good, too. I think Elanco's a little too high. How about David in Texas? David.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
David, doing well. How about you?
Great. I love your show. I live
Thank
in
you.
Beautiful Galveston, Texas. And since I live on the Gulf of Mexico, I was interested in a company called Clean Harbors Incorporated.
Clean Harbors is good. I'm not going to rave about it because I don't think it has a bunch of disparate businesses. I wish it actually would split itself up at this point. But I know that Galveston's the third coast, and I know it's beautiful. I'd love to take the show there, but they keep me chained to my desk wherever the heck I am right now. Let's go to Bob in New York. Bob!
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Bob.
My son just started working for the Wix Corporation, and he has an opportunity to buy stock in it. Can you give a short and long-term opinion
on... I'm going to give you a straight dope. First of all, I want to congratulate you and your son. I think Wix is a great company. Second, I am a Wix client, full disclosure, at our restaurants. You cannot make great websites on the cheap, meaning without having a lot of money, unless you use Wix, which is monumental. He has done a great... You should be very proud of your boy. Let's go to Amy in Nevada. Amy!
Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Amy, I'm doing quite well. How about you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Thank you for all your valuable information.
Thank you.
I really need your help today.
Sure.
I'm calling regarding the electric Chinese car company, NIO.
Now, we looked at NIO. Look, you know, I'm recommending Alibaba again because it's, I think, a really good situation. I cannot recommend NIO. And that, ladies and gentlemen, other. Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Alphabet, the stock, is now trading below where it was when reported on Monday night. And you know what? I think it's steal here.
Buy.
Why? Because this was the quarter where we realized that you need to pay the piper to get sales on the internet. And in most cases, the piper is Alphabet's Google, hence its 22% revenue growth. So many of the winners this quarter have said the same thing. Their strength comes directly from going direct to the consumer. Whenever you hear some executives say direct-to-consumer, DTC, you should immediately think Facebook, Amazon, and most importantly, Google, because their ads are how you sell things directly to the consumer. Consider what we heard from Clorox, Ralph Lauren, and Estee Lauder just this very week. All three talked extensively about their digital channel spending. Ben Odor, the CEO of Clorox, specifically pointed out on this show how his venerable company has now crossed the big barrier. 50% of his advertising is now digital, because that's where the buyers are. Sure, Clorox has some amazing brands. We think of the trash bags and kitty litter, salad dressing, and, of course, their bleach products by name. But digital is all about buying when you need it. When you need it, where you need it. Point of maximum engagement, which is Google. If you're on a search for the strongest disinfectant, for instance, you're going to end up with bleach. And there's an article right at the top that mentions Clorox. But right next to them, what do you see? You see ads for this thing called Simple Green cleaning products. You aren't going to see Simple Green in the supermarkets. So there's an amazing equivalence on the web with some unknown brand right there at the point of purchase. In short, if you don't advertise on Google, somebody else is going to take that business from you. As much as they have spent, I think Clorox is going to have to spend even more on Google to keep business going in the future. Then there's Ralph Lauren, which made no secret of what's driving its recent strength. CEO Patrice Louvet explained, and I quote, "As you know, direct-to-consumer remains our number one priority." Number one priority. He goes on, and I quote, "In the third quarter, the company increased marketing investments by 18%. And then he adds, "We continue to shift our spend to channels that matter most to consumers today, namely digital and social." Digital. Again, think Google. Although for the core brand, you might think Amazon. Ralph Lauren is just that well-known. For social, that means Facebook, because it's still effectively the only game in town, thanks to all the influencers on Instagram. Some execs check their influencers literally hourly. Hourly, for heaven's sakes. Yes, it's that compulsive. Why not? Some of these people have millions and millions of followers, and they're wearing the clothes. Louvet called his digital spending an investment. Do you know that Fabrizio Freda, the brilliant CEO of Estee Lauder, used the exact same word? It's now an investment, not an expense. For Ralph Lauren, it's an investment in capturing the coveted under 35 demographic that had left the brand. It's working. For Estee Lauder, it's all about young people worldwide, but particularly the 400 million Chinese millennials who are best reached through Tmall and Alibaba. Hey, we heard something similar recently from Lululemon, perhaps the best online retailer around. Lulu's invested heavily in digital, which now represents a quarter of their business, with online traffic up 35%, conversion rates in the high single digits, which is astonishing. Again, Lulu's got a real brand. You might go directly to their site, or you might end up there after searching for sports apparel on Google. This morning, Capri Holdings, that's the old Michael Kors, reported a fabulously better-than-expected quarter. I think Google and Facebook may have helped. What can I say? Digital is the future of retail. Don't believe me? I want you to do something. It's a little experiment, especially if you're in Manhattan. Go walk down Fifth Avenue in Midtown, the most expensive shopping district in Manhattan. You know what you'll see? Almost nobody with shopping bags. Everyone's looking at the showroom, then they're buying online. So if you're a retailer, you need to pay Google for advertising, just like you had to pay rent on Fifth Avenue in the old days. It's simply where all the shoppers are, which is why I like Google's parent, Alphabet, so much into today's pullback. Stick with Kramer. All right, I talk a lot about the companies that had the great quarters. I've got my nomination for the worst quarter of 2019, and it's Electronic Arts. They put on a clinic about how not to have a good quarter. They did seem to go, I tell you, it was almost as if they went out of the way to screw up. There were so many mistakes made, and at least they own them, and I appreciate that, but there's no way I can recommend that stock. Like I said, there's always a market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow!
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.